Okay, we got. Gentlemen, I have a world to teach, and I have to be honest with you. It's the year is over. You understand? I know what's happening now. There's a countdown, and let's take advantage of these last few weeks. We're not going to finish everything, but that's why postgraduate is great. Rakefa teaches himself, and you're welcome to listen. And exactly the line where we leave off in each class is where we'll pick up. Tomorrow's class, it's $99,000 linked to the shekel to get in. There's an IOU list, you'll ask there. I begin Messianicism tomorrow. What we just spoke about in the hall comes into the lectures. Any question? But I have questions to ask first. Yeah, go ahead.
The woman died an hour after Shabbos.
Right.
The funeral was midnight.
Right.
Is that Kabbalah on me?
You're asking the old question. It's Yerushalayim, that's all I can tell you. But I'll tell you this, I couldn't go to a funeral 12 midnight, pikuach nefesh, for myself. You understand?
Well, we were calling people at a quarter of 11 and couldn't get in touch with them.
No, you hit the nail on the head, but that's minig Yerushalayim. If you made a case that someone has to come in and their children in Haifa and they can't get in, a lot, the Chevra Kadisha might budge.
But one of the doors in Petah Tikva.
Petah Tikva is an hour, at that time it's an hour and a half away. But you hit the nail on the head. I have two similar questions. I have to laugh because I actually asked my grandchildren these questions towards the end of Pesach. And then I get an email from Bram Wakes, who lives in, I believe it's Johannesburg, South Africa. And he asked me the very questions I asked. And I emailed him back. I have no answer. One question is very simple. Yiska this year fell in Chutz Laaretz on Shabbat. Forget about Shabbat. Yontif, Simcha, V'samachta b'chagecha. It's Mevatel Avelot, Yontif. Right or wrong, you sit 1 hour, 1 minute before Pesach began. I know people, Lo Aleinu, a Talmud of mine was buried Erev Pesach, Rabbi Bella, Zeichat Tzadik Levracha. I found out after Pesach, I was shaking when I found out. So you sit shiva a half minute and the shiva is over. How do you say Yiskaron on Yom Tov? Good question or not? I don't have an answer. So he asked me, Shabbos and Chutz Laaretz, Shabbos, Yiska. My only answer is that if you ever in the rabbinate, Yiska is next to Yom Kippur, the high point of your shul. That's when everyone comes in, including the twice a year Jews, including Lo Aleinu, the Mechalalei Shabbos, the traditional, and you have to make an appeal. Those appeals make or break the synagogue. I now take you back to Beth Ephraim, the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. The first rabbi, I knew him well. He's no longer around. His name was Aaron Rothkopf. And I will take you into the shul, Yiska. Well, in the rabbinate I used Aaron. Ani was from Bnei Kiva days. Aaron Rothkopf, and here he is. Moraiva Rabotai, ladies and gentlemen, at this consecrated moment, when we're ready to open the doors to the past and to recall our ancestors and forebears, tell me, why is it so important to recite Yiska? To mention our parents, our grandparents, our beloved ones who are no longer here. My dear friends, if we don't open the door to the past, there is no way to have a future. The secret of Jewish continuity and survival is to appreciate our past. To understand what it means to be a Jew, the sacrifice our ancestors made to bring us to this moment that we are standing in the sanctuary about to say Yiska. If we recall them and understand them and comprehend their message, their challenge to us, their charge to us, then we can open the doors to the future. Then we have a future. Then our children will be ours. My dear friends, I'm in the shul. What do you want? This is 1962. I haven't finished. That's what I want to do now. Michael, you hit the nail on the head. My dear friends, synagogue is dedicated to keeping the doors open. The doors to the past. But more important, if those doors are open, we can open the doors to the future. We need your help. We need your support. The institution has to be sustained. Salaries, electricity, all that goes into running a synagogue. Please help me keep the doors open in dignity. And then Herbie Moltz calls out, Rabbi, $100. That was a lot of money, 1962 money, $100. Do you follow, Steve? So that gentleman, the gentleman, that's my answer. But it's a Peretz Van Bubba. I don't want to translate that. By the way, I have to tell you, certain things happened in America. If it turns out to be true, I am petitioning Yeshiva University to change the entire yeshiva back to Yiddish. And this class will be entirely in Yiddish. You think you can have Torah in English? If what happened in America is true, I'm waiting to hear. After class, I can't talk about it. It hurts. It's an old chavre of mine. No one knows what I'm talking about. I'll give you one hint. New Haven, Connecticut. That's it. Gentlemen, I am dead serious. Back to Yiddish, the entire yeshiva. We should go back to being a klisheni, not a klishlishi, a klirvigim, and lichtor, tiftayim, and dred. What can I do? All right, back here. Gentlemen, what I just said is the Torah. Do you know your little Yiddish? For your sake, I have to translate. Rav Shach switched Panovich to Hebrew. Do you know why? For the Eitot Tamizrach. And don't let anyone, if anyone speaks negatively of Rav Shach, smack his face and tell him what I just told you. For that alone, he deserves credit.
I'm lucky
Rabbi Reuben is in here, period.
Yet we'll fix his wife's
car. Okay, say that. Do me a favor, give us air conditioning at 22. Okay. If anyone, I looked into, Meliktiftayan Dred means, it's a Peretz Van Bubba, means that's an answer you tell your grandmother, you know, that it's not serious. I looked into Minhagim books and I couldn't come up with a reason. If anyone knows a reason, please let me know. Okay, number two, the other question. I address all my letters according to the Pasher of the week. It's if you know about this, there's a lot of Hasidic literature, and the Hasidim always say that when something happens in a certain week, look at the Pasher and you'll understand why it's happening. So I address my letters. It's easier for me. I don't know the English date. I don't know the Hebrew date, but I do know today is Rosh Chodesh Iyar Aleph Pashet Emor. Tell me, in America, is that date good? I'm writing letters to America, to China, to South Africa. Is that date good? And no, what Pasha are they up to? All right, so we broke Pashiyot. We had Shabbos and they had Acharon Shel Pesach. Why didn't they read Acharei Mot Kedoshim yesterday? Why is this going to hang over our heads until a week before Tisha B'Av? Think for a second. Matot Masa'im. Can you believe it? Who made this up? What are they doing to us? What's the reason? I don't know. I try to find. Is there I wrote back, you know, all right, I try to give an answer, my mind works. So I said, look, people didn't travel back and forth when the Minhag of Kriya began. I can't go into a shiur now. Do we read 1 year, 3 years? I'm sure you know a little bit about Kriyat HaTorah. There's a whole history. But when the Minhag began, people didn't go back and forth. You visited Israel once in a lifetime. Today we go back and forth weekly. Could you imagine someone who's going to be here this Shabbos, goes back next Shabbos, comes back this next Shabbat, he's either skipping or reviewing or repeating? Why torture people when all you had to do yesterday was read the Acharei Mot Kedoshim? I have one grandson, could have read Acharei Mot Kedoshim without making one mistake. He would have read both Parshiyot in 25 minutes. No, what's the big deal?
Doubling Parshiyot?
Why can't you double?
Isn't there a specific order that the rabbis...
Yeah, but Acharei Mot Kedoshim is many times double. This year, the leap year. So why can't you double it yesterday?
In terms of the order of doubling.
Why? What do you mean by that? This year we don't double because it's not, because it's a leap year.
No, well, some years more double than other years.
Yeah, that depends on the calendar. Everything depends on the calendar. All right, I don't know...
Before
Shavuot, but Midbar has to be before Shavuot. I have a lot of Divrei Torah on that. Not for now. Yes, that I have from the Rav. But what Baharbuchu Koltai, they could have doubled up and followed our order exactly. Not Baharbuchu Acharei Mot Kedoshim, like the Israelis, follow our order. What's the problem? Why let it wait until 1 week before Tisha B'Av? All right, I don't have an answer. Yoma, all right, that's people who are going back. I understand the people who are coming. People. I don't know. All right, Besaid, I'm throwing the question out. Let me work very quickly. Okay, Mark Wiener, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, my student, when we spoke about cathedrals and organs and how the Jews emulated it, I saw an old large European synagogues built in pipes that were part of the organ system. They were originally built as liberal or reform synagogues. The organs themselves are now gone and the synagogues are now Orthodox. I just want to clarify what I mentioned about organs. He writes, I did not go into any cathedrals. He saw this in synagogues. It's something we spoke about, how originally the Reform movement began emulating the Gentiles with organs. Also, if you recall in the Sunday class many weeks ago, I quoted from the Tshuvat of the Tashbetz about a woman being a son, the Ka'it, you can call her. And I threw out the idea, I wonder if any of the feminist literature has picked this up. So Gary Rosenstein, this is someone listening in... where does he say he lives? In White Plains, New York, correct? So he sent me from a book, Judaism in Practice. And in this book, there's an article, Women at Rituals of Their Children by Lawrence Hoffman. Lawrence Hoffman evidently teaches at Hebrew Union College, okay? And he, Taka, quotes that tshuva. There's a whole three, four-page section at the end of the article in that book. He quotes the tshuva in great detail. So I see that Aaron Rakefet is not the first one to discover it. Okay, let's roll. A gentleman in this class for the newcomers, and let me play with their names. Natan, this class, I have to be very brief. It's Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's Yahrzeit tomorrow. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and I had the privilege of growing up with Rabbi Aaron, and I met him in 51. He's older than I am, but the yeshiva then was a very small yeshiva, and a freshman in high school was in the same yeshiva that someone getting smicha was. The yeshiva began with high school, and it ended off with smicha. It was all yeshivas for Bitzchokhan. Not today, that there's a high school, a college, a postgraduate, and the whole yeshiva was in Yiddish. That was the language that we had to use. So when I came into the yeshiva, Reb Aaron was a few years older, and you know, he was one of the top fellows, and we became colleagues, friends, call it as you wish. when I was privileged to be the Makaber Patash and getting this building for Mr. Gross, so the kollel opens and New York appoints Reb Aaron and Reb David Miller. And the boys, the first fellas in the kollel, many of them had had me as a teacher in college when they studied in BMT when they came for their junior year. At that time, you came for your junior year. So the boys said to me, Rebbe, you're in the building, you're not going to teach. We want you to give us a class. So the boys appointed me to the kollel faculty, YU ultimately agreed months later, and I brought in then the Chama Leibowitz said to me, Atamala Meid, Ani Gamratza. I brought her in. She was just flabbergasted at the low salary we were getting. She said, I couldn't believe that YU pays like that. But I told her we're adjunct, they couldn't care less, we're Israel, and we don't have anyone in America fighting for us. It was an eye-opener for her. But nevertheless, she remained practically till the day she died. And you fellas have a very poor kollel. You have wonderful teachers, but it doesn't compare to what once was with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein and Chama Leibowitz. And oh, what a faculty. So when the boys asked me to teach, I thought to myself, what am I going to teach, Gemara? I can find any Gemara. The Rav taught me how. But Rabbi Lichtenstein doesn't have to find any Gemara. He knows Kol HaTorah Kula Baal Peh. Right or wrong, that was Rabbi Lichtenstein. Photographic memory, Al Hadaf. So I figured out I have to become an expert in a field that no one else knows. And if no one else knows, then I'll be able to give a class. People will come. So I've been trying since 78 formal lectures in response to literature. That's when, I hope I'm right with the year, I may be off, not 78, it's 70, yeah, the formal program, in my book, Washington, I give you the exact dates, check it out, I believe it was 78, the formal program began, and it began with response to literature, and I haven't repeated a lecture subsequently. I have a volume coming out in a few weeks, Rakafat Aaron Chayla Gimel, it's going to be launched in New York this summer, and in that volume, it's 350 pages based upon Shurim I gave in the Kollel many years ago on three major topics. Fine. A few years I devoted to Eruvin, why Jews kill each other over the Eruv in Flatbush, for instance, okay, or the Eruv in London. Why do Jews kill each other over an Eruv? So I devoted a few years to that topic. Believe me, anyone who heard those Shurim or listens to them in yutorah.org understands why Jews kill each other over Erev. But I got involved with Reb Menashe Klein, who was the Bat Plukta of Reb Moshe Feinstein. And I was carried away by Reb Menashe Klein for many reasons, personal reasons which I explained in class, my interaction with him and the whole story with my Talmida. And I watched Reb Menashe Klein on YouTube, and quite a fascinating individual, Elie Wiesel's rabbi, Kavruta, fellow survivor of the Holocaust, the Inferno. So I decided, all right, Reb Menashe Klein left 18 volumes of response to literature, and I started, I think it's this year, right? I began this year a 50-year course on Reb Menashe Klein, his response to literature, as an opening to our world, to his world. Not that we agree with everything. People compliment me. I can teach what I disagree with. What am I? I'm teaching Torah. We study Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Doesn't mean we pass him like Beit Shammai. It's amazing how everyone is ruined by contemporary Yiddishkeit, where everyone says, I'm good, everyone else is no good. It's a terrible way to approach Yiddishkeit. I'm good and everyone else is even more wonderful than I am. That's the proper way to approach Yiddishkeit. Torah Hashem Tamima. So we began, and now we're coming into a subject we spent many weeks already, Reb Menashe Klein, on women having their own prayer groups. And remember, he answered every question he received. As you will see over the next 49 years, Be'ezrat Hashem, Be'ezrat HaNoten Layov Koach, if he answered every question he ever received, he was never censored. It's not like Reb Moshe, who later they censored him, watched what he should answer, not like Reb Avadya Yosef, who was burned by what happened with that famous case of a Kohen to a Gerusha, happened to be my own student involved. And Reb Menashe Klein, nothing could budge him. And his background, fascinating, comes from a very narrow Hungarian background. You understand we're talking Hungary that gave birth to the Munkácsa and to the Szatmár, and he became a Kloisenberger, Reb Menashe Klein, and very fascinating background, and yet total mastery of English, Mazel Tov Avraham, Mazel Tov, total mastery of English, and living, facing our world, you can agree or disagree. Gentlemen, we're now ready to begin. May inyan le'inyan bo'to inyan. I'm not going to finish today by far, but I can tell you in advance that you're going to be overwhelmed by the material, his material, and then I'm going to compare it to Mori Rebbe, to the Rav, my Rebbe Mufik, Shali v'shalosh, Shalohu, and I'm going to give you a case study from America as well. Okay, I'm now quoting from Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Yud Zayin, Siman Tzadi Bet. Now, once again, the tshuva is to Dov Frimer. Now, as we've mentioned, some of you know Dov Frimer. He's a YU graduate. He's a musmach of the yeshiva. He's a powerhouse lawyer in the center of Yerushalayim. And I couldn't understand how he has such an intimate relationship with Reb Menashe Klein. But in the Monday class, there's some people who come in from afar. And one of them, Dr. Charlie Hexter, knows Dov's brother in Rehovot. They live near each other. And Dov's brother explained to Charlie that they lived in Brooklyn at a certain point in their lives. And Dov was very friendly with Reb Menashe Klein. And you see, Reb Menashe Klein was the type of person that could appreciate a YU graduate for what he is. So, this tshuva is to Dov Frimer. It's in 1986, and it's at the height of the feminist movement, the feminist onslaught. This is exactly when Jaffa, whatever they call themselves, is starting to develop. This is where Reb Heschel Schacht, everything we spoke about before Pesach with Reb Heschel and the Ritz, the leading Ritz Rashi Yeshiva, and coming out against feminism or in the sense of women prayer groups and separation, etc., and all that goes with it. Now, this tshuva is very interestingly titled Tashkafat HaTorah B'inyan Shivyon Zechuyot L'Nashim. What is the Hashkafa of the Torah on feminism? Shivyon Zechuyot L'Nashim, which is an interesting translation of what the feminist movement was about. And you're dealing here with the mid-80s. You're dealing here, you got to remember, this movement gets off the floor all over America in the 60s. By the 70s, it hits the Torah community. Rabbi Riskin and everything we spoke about with Lincoln Square, and Rabbi Riskin with Reb Moshe, with the Rav, with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, everything we spoke about, and now it's the 1980s. This issue already is a burning issue. All right? So he says to Dov Frimer, your wonderful letter reached me. We also spoke about it when you visited me last, he writes to Dov. And he says, I spoke with you when you were here last and I told you certain ideas. But I realize that this issue is so important, I want to put my thoughts into writing so no one will misquote me. And then he begins. Now, he begins very simply, when it comes to Dine Torah, basically, men and women are totally equal. There is no difference between them at all. And he uses one of the classic examples. For instance, when it comes to punishment in the Torah, you know, Malkut, corporal punishment, capital punishment, men and women are exactly the same. So on the basic level, there is absolutely no difference between them whatsoever. However, he says, we can ask, right, no difference, but how many mitzvot do women have? how many mitzvot do men have? And this is a legitimate question. Because we see, and he quotes the Gemara in Kedushin, I'm sure you're all familiar with these sugyas, we do see that women are exempt from mitzvot asei shel hazman grama. Women are exempt. All right? Now, what does this mean? Women are exempt mitzvot asei shel hazman grama. Does this mean she's less than a man? Does this mean she's worse than a man? Does this mean her character, her standing, is not on the level of the male? And here he begins, and I have to say, exactly what Reb Menashe Klein is saying now is word by word by word what the Rub said on this very topic 10 years earlier. And we'll come to what the Rub said, but not yet. 10 years earlier. Now, I am positive Reb Menashe Klein did not hear what the Rub said. Why am I positive? Because in those years, the 1970s, the Rav did not allow his recordings to spread. He didn't like that people recorded him. He fought a very bitter battle that goes back to the brisk mentality. Do you understand what I'm saying? I spoke about this in great length decades ago, but let me just say it very briefly. You should never forget this. The greatest mind of the 20th century, as far as Chiddush and learning, may have been Reb Chaim Brisker. So Michael Miller will pop up and say, Rebbe, what do we have from Reb Chaim? So I'm going to give him a little volume, Chiddushei Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi al HaRambam. All right, the original publication, how many pages are there? 150, 170? You're going to look at it and say, this was the most fertile, the most seminal mind. This is all we have? So you have to understand, we almost didn't have that. In Bris, they were perfectionists. I write about this in my work on the Rav. You can read it there, study it there. They were perfectionists. You know what they used to say? Not everything you think do you say, not everything do you say do you write, not everything you write do you publish. And Reb Chaim, it was always, you understand, the Rav was a clone of his Zayda, of his grandfather, when it came to learning. The Rav carried on 1957. We were youngsters again. All the details are in Washington. And we forced the Rav's hand, a bunch of dummies, a kid named Donnie Rothkopf and others. They were chutzpahniks. They were balei gaiva. I would smack their faces. They said to Rabbi Belkin and to the heads of the yeshiva, we know enough, we don't need any Rebbe, just Rabbi Soloveitchik. I mean, this is chutzpah, but right, kids have chutzpah. And Rabbi Soloveitchik agreed to give a college shiur. So we were kids, we were overwhelmed, the Rav, so some took notes better than others. So there was one set of notes that we mimeographed, and the Rav sees this mimeograph sheet, he became hysterical, and he could become hysterical. This is when he had that terrible temper, I would say. I'll use the word. You got to understand who the Rav was in before he mellowed. And oh, what he let us have, and he collected it and had to be destroyed. And we said, Rebbe, what's the difference? It's mimeograph. We all take notes anyway. And the Rav said, I'll tell you what the difference is, he says. If someone will see your notes, he reads your notes, it's your stupidity writing what you think I said. But if it's mimeographed, it looks like it's official, like it's published. Boy, we never mimeographed anything again. You understand, Donnie? We shivered, we shook the Rav. All right. The tape, Aaron Bad, Zeichet Tzadik Levacher, Rabbi Aaron Bad recorded the Shiurim. The Rav trusted him because he was from Connecticut and he knew the Rav. You know, the New Englands were good friends, and the Rav knew Charlie Bad, Aaron's father, so he trusted him. After Shir, Aaron had to give the Rav the tape, chas v'chalila, he wouldn't leave it in the hands of a student, someone might copy it. So the Rav fought, you couldn't circle, excuse me? Perfectionist, maybe he made a mistake, maybe someone will hear the tape and correct him, and he didn't say it properly, he didn't think it out properly, maybe he'll teach it again, he'll revise himself. This was the Rav. This is why I know a guy, Aaron Rekhefet. Aaron Rekhefet is the happiest guy in the world. I've seen him dance on the tables in the classroom when someone in China sends a correction to something he said in Shia. You understand? That's a direct counter-reaction to what being a Talmud of Mori Rebbe 57 beginning. Okay. Anyway, so these tapes are not allowed to circulate. Even today, you cannot come near what's available on the Rav. The family, it's quiet, it's sequestered, it's secret, etc., etc. So I am sure that Rav Menashe Klein didn't do this because he heard the Rav. This is Rav Menashe Klein speaking on his own. And he hits the nail on the head here. Tell me, were you in shul this morning? All right. I was in shul, by Midian, we had a Kohanim, Birchat Kohanim. Can I do Birchat Kohanim? No, now just think for a minute. What does this mean? Does this mean that this Birchat Kohanim by this Kohen, that this Kohen is better than I am? Who gets the first Aliyah? Kohen. Who gets the second Aliyah? Levi. You know, Sherrod, they want to show their frum. There's a checkout stand with a big sign for Kohanim Oni, express checking. You didn't see that joke? It made the rounds on the internet? It's a joke. Don't take it seriously. They'll have it. If I said it now in Borough Park tomorrow, there'll be signs up. Kohanim Oni. But you see, does that make a Kohen better than me? Now, just thinking, he says it here, and the Rav said exactly the same thing. You can take the biggest gadol hadar. Mi lanu yoter gadol, for the sake of argument, Rav Aaron Cutler. If Rav Aaron Cutler went into the Beit HaMikdash and did the Avoda, it's a terrible sin. Does that mean that a Kohen Gadol, has more Kedusha, is better, more important, more sanctified than Rav Aaron Cutler? Than Rav Moshe Feinstein? The Rav, how did he get the name Soloveitchik? No, how did he get the... Natan, do you know how he got the name Soloveitchik? Do you know Polish? Soloveitchik in Polish means nightingale. What's the Rav's name? Do you know the Rav's real name? Yosef Dov, no? Halevi. Soloveitchik. What's the role of a Levi in the Beit HaMikdash? Among his roles, to sing, the choir. The Rav's family felt their Levium. To sing, you have to have a good voice. A nightingale has a good voice. Soloveitchik. And by the way, the Rav in his youth had a very nice voice. If you listen to the Rav out of the 50s, 60s, till the ages, you'll see, he had a very nice voice. When he's Masada Kedushin, you can hear the voice. You're not going to mistake it. Soloveitchik, all right. So she may be related. Generally speaking, anyone named Soloveitchik or Soloway is related. There's some big shot in New York. I think the name is Soloway. He's president of Yale. And he's a Soloveitchik. He doesn't know anything. Ken Gonisht from Yiddishkeit. He knows nothing about Yiddishkeit, but the Yichus is there. So you see that the fact that a woman has less mitzvah than a man does not mean that she is on a lower level. The fact that we have less mitzvah than a Kohen who can give Birchat Kohanim, who can do the Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, it doesn't mean that our Kedusha as a human being, that we are on a lower level. And here he makes an interesting analogy, and I'll tell you something in honor of Aaron Lichtenstein's yahrzeit that you will not forget. Natan, He compares it to an army. When my grandchildren get together, they were in every branch you can imagine, or almost every branch of the army. Many grandchildren, and each kid went to a different yeshiva, different hesda, chose different service in the army, although not the majority, but among the various branches, the tzanchanim went out in my family. If I should ever give a Sefer Torah to the Israeli army, I'll try to give it to the tzanchanim, okay? So, tell me, they would start fighting, which branch is more important? Tzanchanim, artillery, Shiryon. Well, Sayeret is within, but a Sayeret of Shiryon, a Sayeret of Chel Raglim, they're arguing. Tell me, Moshe, which branch of the army is the most important? If you don't have all of them, you don't have an army. No, there's a branch of the rabbinate. What are you, Golan? You're the Skanra Matkal? Who are you today? The chief of staff? The minister of defense? They are fighting the rabbinate like crazy now. You don't know what's going on. So relax. No. Gentlemen, he makes the comparison to an army, and he uses the words in Hebrew. Kimol legion shel melech, shel kol echad yesh lo tafkid acher. It's a fabulous comparison. Now a story on Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. Bidithu havi uvdach. This is actually happened to Reb Aaron. He told me the story decades ago. Reb Aaron, was a big shock for the Israeli scene, because here's someone clean-shaven, and he doesn't dress in black, and he knows the Torah kula, and it's hard for them to digest. So as he started to make progress in Alon Shvut, the yeshiva started to become what it is today, the papers came, they interviewed him, spoke to him. So they asked him, how come you don't dress in black, don't have a beard, how come you're different than the others? So Reb Aaron responded, tell me, which is more important, Tzva Hagana Yisrael or the Mossad? The person interviewing him said, you need both. Reb Aaron said, exactly. Doesn't mean one is more important. You need both. You need choice. You need the world of distinction so people can choose where they want to make their contribution. And then Reb Aaron said, many of my colleagues are in Sahal. They wear a uniform. I'm in the Mossad. In the Mossad, the last thing in the world is a uniform. It's what you don't want. You can't say one is more important than the other. Choice, breath of decision, Reb Aaron, legion, which is more important? Without males and females, there's no world. There's no future. There's no door to tomorrow. And this is what Reb Menashe Klein is saying. Very powerful, and in my humble opinion, very correct. And he says, even the Gentile, well, what's your problem?
No choice.
Well, no choice what?
It's not a good mashal.
What's not a good mashal?
A female can't choose to be a female and a man doesn't choose.
I should hope
man.
So. But they all have Kedusha. What do you like? That Satma? They showed a picture of that Satma man who became a female demonstrating against Israel. That man is doing, that woman, man, whatever the heck she is doing so many sins, it's unbelievable.
No, I understand the Jews. I just don't understand the Marshall.
No choice. Yomo, you didn't have a choice to being born. Please, al kocha tanolad, al kocha tachai. Exactly.
In the army, there is a choice.
You're fighting with Reb Aaron. I thought you're fighting with Menashe
Klein. I'm just saying the Marshall
himself
is not reflecting
the nation. Fine. If the mashal, if Reb Aaron's mashal is not good for you, as the Reb said to us, we once asked him, Rebbe, we had this tremendous problem. We were young kids, we had chutzpah, it's 57. who's 58, was saying, Rebbe, Kol Safir Arashut Netuna, Pirkei Avot, right? How is that possible? So the Rav said, no, it's a very good philosophic question. I'll give you an example. I'll say it in English, but I'm living it in Yiddish. But I have a Datta Mizrach and a Chatan staring at me. We have to accommodate them. I apologize that I don't speak Russian. What's your parents' native language?
Farsi.
Farsi. My apologies that I don't speak Farsi or Russian, but we do what we can. Anyway, the Rav says, I'll never forget this. Let's take a minute off and tell it to you. So he said to the Rav, Hakol Safir Reshut Netuna. So he says, I'll explain to you. And he tells us the following. A young man is locked into a psychological testing room. I don't know how it works today, but in those days they had a window, one-way glass, and the psychologist would watch the person in the room. So could you imagine, they take this yeshiva boy, they put him in the room, and they tell him there's going to be no food for 6 hours. And they put a sandwich in front of him, which they tell him is treif. And they're watching, and they're taking a movie, and the movie records it, and the kid, will he eat, won't he eat? Okay. After this episode is over, the psychologist showed the movie, they're going to discuss it. Let's say the kid didn't eat. Let's say the kid did eat, whatever. So he says, when you see that kid on the screen, does he have freedom of choice? No? Yes or no?
Yes.
And yet you know the end result of the movie. You've seen it before. He's got it. Hakol Safui Varishut Netuna. So it was, you know, it's an. You look, you think. So he saw we were a little perplexed. He said, "You don't have to accept it. I'm only giving this example for those who appreciate it. If you don't understand it, it's okay." So that's what I say to you. You have choice. You can choose. But Byron was saying something very important: that the allegiance of the state of Israel, to use Reb Menashe Klein's words, don't stand or fall on uniformity. You need different divisions, Tzahal and the Mossad. And you cannot say which is more important. And gentlemen, who is sitting here giving this Shayur? I think I'm the only one in the room who can say I served both in Tzahal and the Mossad. Anyone else here serving both? No. So who did basic here? Who did army here? You did army, right? Yeah. What branch were you in?
Pikud Arav.
Pikud Arav. No, so there too you can argue which is more important. My grandchildren, when they heard Pikud Arav or the support, you know, logistics, aspaka, that's not Kravi. I said, not Kravi. If you don't have a Pikud Arav, the whole country can fall apart, particularly today, when the wars are going to be right here, not outside of Israel. Exactly. Pikud Arav is a very serious business today. And if you don't have good computer strategy and good intelligence, a good deal of it is not Kravi. So what? You need it all. So that's to answer your question. Now the answer's a little better. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay, Yoma, you can argue whatever you want. The Rav said to us, if you don't like it, you don't have to lose sleep over it. But think about it. I always, my own grandchildren asked me the Shaila, and I always gave them this mushel, and they would say, you know, not bad. It's something to think about. Hakol Safui Baharashut Netuna. It means that the Ribbono Shel Olam can open three doors at once: the past, the present, and the future. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Time plays no role for him. For us, time plays a role, and that's why that rabbi in Maplewood, South Orange, could give that sermon in Yiska, which brought in a few thousand dollars, which was heavy money in the early 60s. Okay, now. But then, Rav Menashe Klein goes further. And you see here, and exactly the Rav, here he totally parallels the Rav. But why are women are exempt? Why? You know, this is what the feminists are asking or demanding. We want to be like the men. Why do we have to be different? Why can't we have the same responsibilities? And think for a second, shofar. Women me'ikar hadin are exempt from shofar, right? Today it's widely accepted that women are chayavat to hear shofar. We blow for them on Rosh Hashanah, absolutely. You take sukkah, so you know that I've heard women already put up fights. The men build a sukkah, and you don't have that much room, so you build a big sukkah, but only a third of the sukkah is kasher. You know, you understand what I'm saying? The rest of it is takata eitz under the tree. It's under in Israel. You see sukkah that built on terraces, and the part of it is under a terrace above it. And so the men sit in the uncovered part, and the women sit in the part that's not kasher. So you'll hear already women are complaining about that. Alacha kama v'kama. Why can't we be counted for minyan? And why can't we be shluchat tzibur? And I can lane better than any man, and I can daven better, and I have a better voice, and all that we hear in the feminist literature. So here, the Rav says this. Rav Menashe Klein is not philosophically inclined like the Rav. The Rav says that if we're going to raise problems like this, we have to understand something. And what I'm about to say, it is so basic to Torah, to Yiddishkeit. And I'll say something else as well that I'll repeat in a different context tomorrow. Anyone who speaks in terms of our being Orthodox Jews has no seichel whatsoever. There is no such thing as an Orthodox Jew. The minute you say you're an Orthodox Jew, who named us Orthodox Jews? Our enemies. Orthodox, narrow-mindedness. It's Latin, orthodox, narrow-mindedness. The minute you say you're Orthodox, then you have conservative, then you have reform. No, I am a Torah Jew. I am a Jew. There are no streams in Judaism. There are no divisions. The only division I know is Kohen Levi Yisrael. Ah, then you have to ask, what does it mean to be a Jew? What does Torah want out of us? So the Rav always taught us, Na'aseh v'nishma. When it comes to asking, before anything, we have to understand whatever the Torah decrees obligates us. It obligates every Jew, ba'asher hu sham, those who lived with doors of yesteryear and those who will live with doors of tomorrow. Torah obligates. It demands, commands respect. But because we're humans, after we understand Aseh v'nishma, then we have the right to try to understand, not that our observance and commitment is dependent upon our understanding. Absolutely not. Our observance and commitment is a sign of quinine. That's the basis. But then we see in the Torah already, at times the Torah does give reasons. Tamei HaMitzvot. We see in Chazal how many times Chazal in the Agada particularly dealt with reasons. We're human beings, so we have a right to ask why. So Rav Menashe Klein is asking why. The Rav asked why. Why are women exempt? And both of them said exactly the same thing. You can see that this is a divine system. How do we know it? How do we know how to pray? All our prayer is based upon who? Chana, a woman. Her lips didn't move, right or wrong. Very powerful prayer, Chana. Tosel lo na'at. We daven silently. No, the Shmon Esrei, the most important prayer of all, the prayer that needs the most kavana, The prayer that you can't say up on a tree, right or wrong. Shema Yisrael, you don't have, Shema Yisrael, you have to go down. The prayer that makes or breaks us, and yet we don't say a word. And who did we learn it from? It's an amazing thing. People are davening Shema Yisrael, and it's loud, and there's noise. And suddenly you hit the Salon Shmon Esrei, and you can hear a pin drop in the shul. And we learned that from Hannah. And you see, you're learning from Hannah. And Hannah is a woman. And this is a woman who is exempt from prayer. Doesn't have the same obligations that a man has. Doesn't have tefillah b'tzipor. She doesn't have the obligation to daven three times a day. And nevertheless, a great deal of our formulation of prayer is from Hannah. And this shows us clearly that it's not a question of more Kedusha, less Kedusha. Each person has their own responsibilities that the Torah, that God has demanded of them. Being a Jew is living up to these demands. Now, with Hannah, so why? Then you have to say, fine, a woman is on the same level, a woman has the same Kedusha, we learn our prayer from Hannah, but still my mind bothers me, why is a woman exempt? And here, Rabbi Menashe Klein, he doesn't quote, I dealt with this in great length the year I spent on feminism and Shira Hadashah and innovation. Rabbi Menashe Klein doesn't quote the Avudraham, Rishonim, it's a lot of literature on this topic. Essentially, what it boils down to is a woman's lifestyle cannot be interrupted like a man. A man, and we have cases in the United States of America, 130, 40 years ago, there was a lawyer in Philadelphia, and in the middle of a case he was representing and speaking, he looks at his watch, and he asked the judge to call a 5-minute recess so he can daven mincha. I taught this individual's great-great-granddaughter in Michlalam. An Israeli girl already. Family had come in Aliyah from America in the late 40s when the state was established. See, a man, you can break off life. We have an expression in Yiddish when you... I'll mention a name. Professor Avram Yehoshua Heschel. Recognize the name? Professor Heschel, the Jewish philosopher, the Kapishnitz Rebbe's son, the Kapishnitz Rebbe's brother. So, as you know, he came to America. He knew the Rav from Boston. He came to America. He taught first at Hebrew Union College, and then he went to the Jewish Theological Seminary, JTS. And I asked his cousin, who I remain a good friend with until today, my wife's classmate from Ramaz. She was Chaya Heschel, and afterwards Chaya Marcus. She's widowed today. Her husband was a good friend of mine, Rabbi Eli Marcus. So why you mismach? Says the Kronel of Racha. Sons of why you mismach? Nachum and David. So I once asked Chaya, tell me, was your cousin really from? And she said to me, et nisht fafelt mincha. Translation, he never missed davening mincha. Now, why is that the ultimate compliment for Frumkeit? I've said this many times, I say it again. It's very simple. Shachrit, you wake up in the morning, Mordani Lefanecha. No, if you're programmed, I don't want to say how many days. It's probably well over 50 years since I missed the morning minyan. But if you're programmed, you know, you have to go to shul. You have to daven. The day is beginning. Everything else is delayed. You daven, you have breakfast, your day begins. Maariv is the easiest thing in the world. You come home, all right, maybe it's too late to catch a minyan. In Israel, it's a little bit easier, particularly in Yerushalayim, in Bnei Brak, you have shtiblach. But you know, you have to daven maariv, it's the end of the day. You can't go to sleep without davening. But mincha, you can be so involved. You're in class, you're here, you're writing a paper, you're doing research, you're now a doctor, you're a dentist, you're a lawyer, you're a fireman, you're a policeman, you're a soldier. Whatever you're doing, wow. Ah, if you remember to break and daven mincha, that's a sign that you are committed. Et nisht fafelt a mincha. He never missed a mincha. A man can break the day. Now look at a woman. You have little children. Now you just think the responsibility with little children, feeding them, watching that they don't put anything into their mouths. They just had here a case, a girl put a balloon, swallowed a balloon, a little baby doesn't know. There was Lo Aleinu, a case down south, a mother fell asleep on top of her infant child and rolled over and smothered the child to death. So it was in headline news here. Gatzal Apit, and what it means, little children, how you have to watch, how careful you have to be. A kid runs out into the street. I'm a driver. I remember in Hanover once, this kid saw his father and ran out in front of me. I put the brakes on. God was kind to me. I didn't touch the kid. A little kid. It's beyond words. So a mother is a full-time responsibility. The Ribbono Shel Olam understood this. Now, look, this can't be changed. This cannot be changed. A man is a man, a woman is a woman. You want to prove, Simon, that it can't be changed, that it's ontological? You know what that word means? The Rev taught it to me, Natan. Ontological, part of creation, okay? With me, that's Josh, I should say. Natan is back there. Josh, ontological. Josh, it can't be changed. It can't be changed. You want a proof that I'm right? Don't follow me up on this, because you're young, yet you have to smile. You go into a hospital, Lower Lane. You know, I grow older. The news I get is not happy. When you bury students, you can imagine how a Rebbe feels. So you go into a hospital. You'll see people critically ill, and they're in, pandemonium, whatever. There may be a more technical term for it. You can correct me if you wish. And you hear them crying, Mama, Mama, Mutter, Mutter, Mother, Mother. How would you say it in Russian? Mama. And how do you say it in Persian? Mama. Huh? So we got the same word all over.
Except for Georgian.
What?
Except for Georgian. Georgian, what? Mama, and Dada.
Dada, all right, so Mzayn Gesund. But you see, it's very powerful. Why aren't you calling for your father? Because that's a child, a mother, a child. The Rav was very powerful with this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, where Batsheva refers to Shlomo HaMelech when she's rebuking him, Ba Bitni, Ba Rachmi. That my son was once part of my body, part of my womb. That is a mother. And you cannot tell a mother, stop being a mother. And so then, of course, the question comes further, and I'll never forget this as long as I live, comes back to me. I'm living in Israel 47 years, so I've seen a lot that's happened here in our world. So there was a person, you all know the name, but you don't realize how innovative this man is and was, Rabbi Herbie Bravender, Chaim Bravender. Recognize the name? He started many schools. It's interesting, he doesn't remain with them indefinitely. He moves on to something new. That's his personality. Fine. So Rabbi Herbie Bravender, Chaim Bravender, he was a classmate of Steve Riskin, Rabbi Riskin, they're classmates, they're Brooklyn boys. Then they came to YU uptown. They're a little drop younger than I am. So he founded a school for girls, which has gone through many, many divisions today. What's it called today?
Lindenbaum.
Yeah, it's Midrashat Lindenbaum. It's no longer Bravender's. All right, the Lindenbaum people gave heavy money. I understand it. They bought a hotel. School isn't Talpiot. It's way out. Can I call that Talpiot?
Is that?
No. Okay. So that school began in my neighborhood. So one time, Friday night, I'm coming home from the Kotel. I remember it was the winter. It was a misty Friday night, and the Vic Rain wasn't living here yet. And I did a very bad thing, Vic. I eavesdropped. And I see two college girls, you know, must be juniors in college. At that time, you came at least a junior or post-college. And they're talking to their madricha. And they're saying to their madricha, all right, I can understand, we'll have children, we'll be busy. But why can't we daven now? Why can't we put on tefillin now? And the madricha answered, because once you start, you know, you may want to continue. And who knows the choices you'll make. You may not even want to marry for fear you'll have children. It'll contradict with your davening, with your home gestalt of three times a day. And I have to tell you, that was a very brilliant and positive answer. I sign on. A man is a man, a woman is a woman. Raising children is the most important task we will ever accomplish in life. In my own family, a granddaughter-in-law had another great grandchild. This is a lady who's accomplished a great deal. I don't want to talk further. Baruch Hashem, Hebrew U, studying for a PhD in science, accomplishment. And when I was introduced to my new great-grandson, she said, this is the greatest achievement of my life. I said, absolutely, 100%. And by the way, what I'm alluding to here in parentheses is our tremendous challenge today. As women are out of the ghetto, women are integrated into life, women study, have degrees, work, chas v'chalila that women will not want to have children because work is more important. Accomplishment outside the home is more important. If we hit that stage, it is sad for the Jewish people. I have students with 7, 8, 9, 10, I have a niece, 13 children, and I always say that's the greatest answer to Hitler and the Sona Yisrael. A Satmar lady died in America. In the last few years, the New York Times wrote it up. How many hundreds followed her bier, direct descendants? A simple Satmar lady. Family wiped out by Hitler. I think it was the second marriage for her. And, wow. So, you see, this is a tremendous challenge here. But as my wife always says to me, what did you do when the kids were little? When were you home? And she's right. I was working, I was creating, establishing, thinking, doing, writing. All right, by the time you have grandchildren, you're a lot smarter. I certainly was a better grandfather than a father. But he hits the nail on the head here. And you have to remember, and you see, the Tzad Gidul Banim, what a woman goes through in life, is infinitely more than a man. And let me explain myself. And you'll find this in Family Redeemed. It's an English version of the Rav's first Yotzai Drasha for his late wife in 68, the Tanya Soloveitchik Labriyut Memorial Drasha, where the Rav spoke about the difference between man and woman. And you see, a woman, what I quoted before about Batsheva, Barbitni, Barachmi, for a woman, she never wants to break the umbilical cord. That child is part of her. He grew up in her body. That's why the Mishnah in Yevamot paskins lahalacha that a daughter-in-law can't say edut on a mother-in-law and vice versa, because there's a subconscious rivalry there, a tension. That mother who raised that son, gave that son her blood, her milk, her life basically, his life. And along comes a strange woman and takes away her son. And you all know, when that son is then caught up in a quagmire, he has to balance happiness in his own family with kibud avim. It's not easy. A father is very different. A father is a male figure. Kasheya yaseh ishet b'no. He's a teacher. The father's greatest pleasure is to see the son stand on his own two feet. You see this in literature. You see it in movies. A mother can't let go. A father, you're on your own. You're 18. You're 21. Supported you enough. You're out in the world.
But if the mother can't let go, she's going to give her son grief.
And so I understand. You have to find a happy balance. I just said that a minute ago. But it's harder for a mother to let go.
But she has to.
Well, if a mother and son are smart, they can work out a happy balance. You also need a daughter-in-law who can understand life a lot deeper and a lot better. This is, what you're touching upon is why psychologists and social workers and psychiatrists make such a good living. And a malamed like Rakefid, like the malamed, Baruch Hashem. But it is, the Rav was so magnificent. When I'll never forget that dresher as long as I live. The Rav said something there, which I write up in the Rav, and you don't have it in Family Redeemed. So Josh, you're going to ask a question. How did Rakefet have it, and Family Redeemed is from manuscript, and they don't have it? All right, you'll find it, you know what I'm saying, in the Rav, not in the first volume, second volume, whatever volume I wrote it up on. And I think, I don't want to guess, maybe first volume, the Rav. I write in Washington, I explain how I have two passages in the Rav that everyone who worked for manuscript, they do not have Natan. You know what the difference is? I got what I wrote up from a live tape of the Rav. How I got the tape? Criminal, sinful, absolutely confessed to the crime, but nevertheless, pikuach nefesh. Okay? If you know the shachosh in this way, you know what I'm talking about. If you rob the Vrei Torah, it could be you're not obligated. You're robbing, you have to save your soul. When the Rav ad-libbed, those were the most fabulous moments. You've seen the picture with the Rav in my book with the holding his glasses, the Roy Albert picture. That's the most fabulous moment. Because the Rav was not reading his manuscript. He was ad-libbing. So the Rav ad-libbed the difference between a mother and father. And you never forget this. Write it down and you can give drushet on it. He said, a mother's memory is an event memory. A father's memory is an image memory. And the Rav explained, what does an image mean? Very distant. Yes, you barely can remember. But all right, it happened. An event memory, you're living it 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later. And the Rav gave an example. He said, when my wife and I look at pictures of our children 30 years ago, I see a distant image. Yes, it's my sons, my daughters. My wife will tell you where she bought the dresses that they're wearing, where she bought the shoes that they're wearing. She's living it. And this is the difference. It's ontological. If, God forbid, the feminist movement deprives us of this, we have no tomorrow. And you see with the world, the homosexuality, this is all a fallout from the feminist movement, where we lose all identity, all basic experience as a human creature of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And by the way, you should know with homosexuality and lesbianism and all that we hear, all research in the world, and you can go online, shows that in the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, people with inborn such tendencies are less than 2%. Take a look what's happening today. How many people claim, oh, I can't change, I was born this way. It's social. I've given examples from my own teaching, problems I've dealt with, but it's not for now. But you should be aware, this is already a fallout, unisex. We all become exactly the same. Same job opportunities, same bathrooms, and it can be the same sex marriages. It's all a fallout. The divine system, a man is a man, a woman is a woman. And this is why a woman will suffer infinitely more with Sagidul Baram, a child who goes off the path, a child who rebels, a child who is fresh, a child who has difficulties. Mothers will be moseret nefesh to help the child. Somehow the father can reduce it to an image, not an event. Yes, Kitty.
So you said a mother's memory is an event memory, based memory?
A mother is an event memory. A father is an image memory. The Rav said so beautifully in this talk, you'll see it in Family Redeemed. In this talk, the Rav spoke about God as a male and as a female. That they're both attributes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shechina. Yes, I obviously you recognize there's a lot of Kabbalistic influence there. Shechina represents the Ribbono Shel Olam as a feminist personality. And he spoke about Habein Yakiri Li Ephraim, Yeled Shashuim, Midei Dabribo, Oldes Karena. Ne'um Hashem. I'm quoting the end. Give me, anyone give me the exact quote? Look it up, Yomo. But and the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying to us, I'm not looking at you the way you are today. A middle-aged man, a sinner, concerned only with himself. I remember you as a little kid, a playful kid, a sinless child. Yeled Shashuim. Midei Dabribo, whenever I speak about you, Zachar Eskarena. Rachem Arachamenu Od. I remember you as a blameless, guileless child. That's why I want to have mercy on you. And this is why we turn to the Ribbono Shel Olam on Rosh Hashanah and beautiful prayers, and we plead with God, don't look at us the way we are now. Look through the door of yesteryear, how we began. And the Rav developed this idea, the male and female, and he has it here. I can't say it's as profound as the Rav, but it's that same thrust, that you don't want to take a woman and curtail her time. She has her own directives, fulfillments, and goals in life. And the most important, children, Tzar Gidl Banim, and all that goes with it. Okay, beautiful. Now, there's another passage here which is open to question. And here you see how much life has changed. My mother's Zichrono Livracha, my mother's life spanned practically a century. So my mother, what she saw, what she was part of, was born in Harlem. My father was born in Harlem, and both their lives ended in Jerusalem. It's an entire world. So my mother's first husband, my father couldn't make himself a cup of coffee. I'm telling you as it was. He was the only son. He had two sisters. His parents had come to America, teenagers, 16, 15 years of age, married in America, Yiddish, spoke Yiddish to each other. And my father, you know, that was a man. He didn't go near the kitchen, couldn't make himself a cup of coffee. After my father died, a few years later, my mother married Bezidik Sheni, the father of one son I got smicha with and one son I graduated college with, a wonderful man, Reb Moshe Appelbach. Wonderful man. Reb Moshe, born in America, like my father, lived much longer than my father. Reb Moshe Appelbach, who was widowed when my mother married him, obviously, couldn't make himself a cup of coffee. Could you imagine?
Taste's choice, with or without taste's choice.
But with or without. There's something. Now, I want you to understand. Is there anyone in this room who doesn't know how to make himself a cup of coffee? I'll go even better. I can provide all my own food, from the freezer to the microwave. Not a problem. Not a problem.
What's the big deal?
Correct. It's a different world today. Not only that, I see my grandchildren. Each one is a chef. They work with their wives in the kitchen.
I don't cook.
So here you see from the old generation. I'll tell you a story with Rabbi Lichtenstein. I mean, again, my stories, I knew Rabbi, you know, we were friends. It's not just the Talmud. Talmud Chaver will say, all right. So there was a family that came, spent the sabbatical here in the early, it must be 73, 74. And I later taught their daughters, very nice family. And they were both into English literature. So they were a natural for a baron. We all lived a half block of each other then in Yerushalayim. And we were good friends, the three of us. So one Friday, we happened to be in their kitchen. And whatever it was, I forget, we had a meet, we had to plan something. And the wife was cooking, her mother was visiting cooking, and her husband was helping cooking too, a professor. So when we walked out, the baron says to me, we saw three yentels making Shabbos, you know, Yiddish expression. It was unbelievable. We laughed. But it's a different world today. So why am I saying this? And I see my grandchildren, I see each one has a specialty, and they make a special cake, and all right, they're beautiful. So he has a paragraph here, and he says, and I'm quoting him word by word, that it's not just children. The husband comes home from work, and she has to have his machal umishta ready. Lehachin lo shat zrachov kemoshen ema eselo eza kenegdo, he first you a sauce and evanesa. You can look it up. I don't want to go into details, but you get the feeling. And if she's going to go to shul, or she's doing another mitzvah, or she's busy learning Torah, what kind of shalom bayit will there be? And he describes, I'm quoting word by word, page Kuf Pei Zion, the husband will come home hungry, and there's nothing to eat, ukiyotze bazeh, etc., etc., ulachein patura b'mitzvot aseh shechazman grama. And while the husband is in shul in the Beis Medrash, the woman should be standing in the house and getting his food ready, and this will bring tremendous blessing to the house. How can you require her to take on mitzvot aseh shechazman grama? Now, I don't know whether this paragraph is correct today. I mean, you see, this there is truth to it that, look, a man can work very hard. A woman, I've always encouraged when I'm asked the question, what field should I study? So I always tell the woman, pick a field that when the children are young, you can minimize your hours. For instance, a woman who's a medical doctor, I have many students who are medical. As a matter of fact, I just was at a dermatologist Thursday. It's my student, my Talmida. She's my regular dermatologist. I go to her all the time. It's a pleasure and honor. She's my Talmida. But you see, to be a doctor, when the children are younger, you can work part-time. Later in life, you can work a little more. To be a teacher, you can arrange hours. A woman who's a lawyer, children are younger, you have to limit your practice, absolutely. Tzah Gidl Bonim is a life ongoing experience, but there's no question, later in life you can expand your activities outside of the house. A husband has to make a living, he has to be the mainstay of the house. All of you know that we have difficulty with the Haredi world. The Haredi world has difficulty with itself today, where the woman is the Eshet Chayil doing everything, and the man is sitting in the Beis Medrash. Al pi halacha, the man has to support his wife, and this is the writer, those of you who have already obligated yourself to a ketuvah, Ribbono Shel Olam, Natan, are you married?
Yes.
So you signed the ketuvah, you aid them, you took a Kabbalat Kinyan, you're signing means nothing, it's the Kabbalat Kinyan. You know what you obligated yourself. If Avram would know what a ketuvah says, he'd run away to Berlin right now. You understand? Giddy. You understand? So a man, so he's describing here a very beautiful scene, and it is true that there are times I will tell my wife, honey, I'm going to come home exhausted, please make a salad. They understand things that are time-consuming. Yeah, it is true. But it's interesting, the basic, I've heard the women's libbis say, I quote, I'll end with this, I'm watching the clock, I've heard women libbis say, look, we don't have to churn the butter. We don't have to bake the bread. We have time on our hands. Why can't we daven in shul 3 times a day and lead the services and just like a man and read from the Torah? And it's fine. What they're saying may very well be correct, but it doesn't affect the basic gestalt. A man is a man with his responsibilities, with the ability to say, stop the clock, I'm getting off to go to shul now. A woman is caught up in a life cycle where at times it would be very difficult to stop the clock. And this is what Rebbe Menashe Klein is saying. The example with children, I think, is ontological. The example with responsibility in the house, I can understand that this has an adjustment in modern times. We have to differentiate between the two. I don't know. It could be, if you see Shtisel, you'll understand what I'm saying. You notice that as modern as Harav Shtisel is, and he is a modern individual, and his whole gestalt, but you notice he's always schnurring food from women. He can't do his own cooking. Never. He's always looking for a free meal. Let's hope it become a total shomer mitzvah as Rav Shtisel should be. But I basically love Gabbai Sassoon. I can't believe he's a Sfardi. He's a Moroccan, they tell me. He's not. His Yiddish is better than the. It's the best Yiddish on the whole program. And all my grand. I hear everyone that. Roshayim Arurim. Chazdei Hashem. Wherever I go. How are you? Chazdei Hashem. Okay. This. We've started this tshuva of Rebbe Menashe Klein. We have a lot more to go. Vashab megetonheit. I'm preparing you from when the yeshiva goes back to Yiddish. If this was true, what happened in New Haven, then you understand. If you've studied, you can't just read the Rav. You have to. If you've studied the Rav by a guy named A.R.R., they call me in the office. R.A.R.R., that's the initials they use. I'm Michael Diyar, A-R-R is fine. Steve, you will see that this question of feminism. It's a haunting question, and it's not easy to dismiss, and it's not easy, you don't accomplish anything by laughing at it. But if we accept this basic discrimination between human beings, that everyone has a different role, and you don't want a Tzantchan to be a Shiryon, and you don't want a Mosatnik to be in Sahal. And by the way, it's a very good example, because if a Mosatnik puts on a uniform, he defeats his very purpose. You follow me? It's a very good example. I mean, I understand what Yomo was saying, but Rabaron Lichtenstein's imagery here is magnificent, in my opinion. Reb Menashe Klein is dealing with the problem. Many things he said echo the Rav, but we have a lot more to go, a lot more to go further, and there's a lot more to the sideshows involved. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I start Messianicism, and it's heavyweight material. I'm telling a story tomorrow, and that story, which happened to me in 1968, came to life last Monday night in Jerusalem. And that story alone, where Akefet gets his, Rothkopf, I should say, gets his head chopped off, and what happened last week, 99 grand to the IOU list. The IOU list. Josh, don't worry about it. The Rebbe never took a penny from any student. But there's an open Gemara. Ashtar the muggin shapya. A doctor that heals for nothing is worth nothing. So if you come in tomorrow and you feel, oh, it's a lecture on the house. But 99 G's linked to the shekel, it's a different story.
Did you burn the IOUs with the chametz?
The chametz, boy, did I have chametz to burn with the IOUs, and I couldn't use plastic bags, ecology, what went on. And all Pesach, when I walked past where we burned the chametz, the big, big burning in the Bustan, you know where, I met Herbie there. I could smell the chametz there, the smell was in the air. But Baruch Hashem, it was a good kosher Pesach. As I said to you, if you buy everything before Pesach, you can't go wrong, particularly with machine matzah. You see, if it wouldn't be machine matzah, then you have a problem, but machine matzah. But tomorrow I'll say more. I'm going to show you three stands I took on questions I was asked, and all three I found others agreeing with me. Baruch Shekibanti. Will you see Yitz Rubin? What's going to be? Will he be here tomorrow?
I don't know.
You know, so let me hold on to this. These are freebies. People send me, and I hate to throw things out that can have value to someone, a fabulous article that my wife and I know all about. My wife researched this years ago because she's an artist. The person here is an artist. How they caught Adolf Eichmann. Unbelievable story. Unbelievable. And here they give you the story with the man living on the Lower East Side, and it turns out he was the one who caught and how he caught.
Malkin.
Yeah, it's about Malkin.
He was an artist.
Yeah, right, he was an artist, and he painted. There was a whole movie. We have the movie, actually, but I can't show it today. It's a video. I'm sure it's maybe on YouTube someplace. Now, this is an article about Nat Lewin's mother. It's by Nat Lewin's daughter. I know the whole story here, but here it is. I have two copies. How my grandmother's chutzpah helped rescue 6,000 Jews from Nazis. It's on Sempo Sugihara, and how she helped as a Dutch citizen. Here, if you have any interest in Yeshivat Mir, it's documents on Leib Malin. Leib Malin was one of the lions of the Mir through Shanghai to America to Brooklyn. He died young. You can read about Reb Leib Malin. Fabulous. In honor of Yom HaTzmut, one of the great individuals in Israel, the chairman of Zaka, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, the grandson of the foreign minister of the Eda Haredit, and how he became a proper Jew. Here's an article from the New York Times that echoes New Haven. prep schools wrestle with sex abuse accusations against teachers, and these are the top prep schools. Gentlemen, I don't know the world I'm living in. All I can tell you is I came from a world where people didn't rape women and didn't lower, you know, I can't even mention the other thing with, I don't know, to be a teacher, to be a rebbe, you're a role model. Eyes are upon you. I don't know. It's beyond me. This is a fabulous article. Michael Miller walked down. Is he here? He's a baseball man like myself. It deals with a guy is employed by the Yankees, and I think it's the Yankees, or he's employed by others, and he watches ball games to see what the umpires may miss, so you can call for a review. And most of the time, this guy is right. The review he calls for is upheld. Finally, a special post-Pesach gift. I can't believe this is true, but it is. My friend Sam Dershowitz, Dr. Dershowitz, Professor Dershowitz, was in Meir Shearim right before Pesach, and he saw signs of Chashash Chametz. And it's telling you, if you have these little phones, iPods, whatever they're called, you may have eaten chametz over it, chametz fell in. Get rid of your iPod. It's being subsidized. They'll sell you a new one. I think it's 99 shekel, or beginning from 99 shekel, reduced rate, subsidized, so you'll have a kosher iPod for Pesach. So I said to Sam, you saw such signs, it's impossible. Every Amoritz knows that Pirurim don't count, right or wrong. Rabbi Steinberg wrote a whole thing about women who drive themselves crazy. He wrote, leave the crumbs on the floor, they don't count. Gentlemen, he photographed it. I made some copies. You're welcome to it. I can't believe it, but the eye does not lie. Until we meet again at 9:05 tomorrow morning, Besorah Tova, Yeshuat Nechamot, Chodesh Tov U'Mevorach, as we get ready for this big week, and finally, Das V'Danya.